Very good Friday. Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature agricultural news reports, I'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news headlines, and I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
Get ready for the 2023 Crop Consultant Conference in Visalia, California on September 27th and 28th, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors. This two-day event will feature a combined 44 hours of live and online continuing education units for attendees in the heart of California, a trade show, first-class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. Come join CCAs, PCAs, growers, and industry professionals at the Visalia Convention Center to hear from researchers and colleagues on the latest in agriculture. Registration is now open at progressivecrop.com/conference.
This segment was sponsored by Polymer Ag, makers of Anti-Stress 550, the climate stress solution. Find out more at polymerag.com.
California and Australia have signed a memorandum of understanding forging a new climate partnership between two of the largest economies in the world. The MOU outlines 5 years of cooperation between California and Australia on clean energy, clean transportation, clean technologies, nature-based solutions, climate adaptation, green finance and investment, and circular economy. Led by Governor Gavin Newsom and Dr. Kevin Rudd, Australia's ambassador to the United States, the California and Australia delegation signed the historic MOU at the Stanford Mansion in Sacramento. Governor Gavin Newsom said that California and Australia are on the front lines of the climate crisis. From extreme heat and historic drought to catastrophic wildfires and rising sea levels, the last few years have crystallized the need for urgent action. He said it's not enough for them to act alone. They're coming together to confront the greatest crisis the world has ever known for the good of all Californians and Australians. Following the MOU signing, the California Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development co-hosted a business forum with the Cal Chamber and the Australian Embassy that focused on the importance of public-private collaboration in the fight against climate change. California's world-leading climate policies have led the state to exceed its 2020 climate target for 4 years. Years ahead of schedule and has created partnerships across the U.S. and around the world. Earlier this month, California signed an MOU with the Chinese province of Hainan to advance climate action. In 2022, California signed memorandums of cooperation with Canada, New Zealand, and Japan, as well as memorandums of understanding with China and the Netherlands to tackle the climate crisis. The governor also joined with Washington, Oregon, and British Columbia to recommit the region to climate action. Last year, California enacted aggressive climate measures with a sweeping package of legislation backed by a multi-billion dollar record investment, and the California Climate Commitment cuts pollution, protects Californians from big polluters, accelerates the state's transition to clean energy, and expands economic opportunities to all Californians. California green jobs are projected to rise by 7%, that according to a new report from Working Nation.
Last year, California had more than 210,000 workers in the green economy with more than 53,000 openings. J.B. Tenko with the Blue Green Alliance says almost every sector of the economy has a role to play in our climate goals.
California, from the size of its economy, the size of its energy need, the energy diversity, the complexity is definitely daunting.
California is spending billions to expand solar and wind power, build the EV charging network, promote energy efficiency, and make our homes, cities, roads, and environment more resilient to the effects of climate change. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Funding has been established for Forever Feed Technologies, which is building the largest and most reliably controlled environmental mills capable of feeding thousands of animals with fresh, high-quality feed year-round, enabling producers to responsibly expand their operations to meet growing demands. Forever Feed Technologies CEO Steve Lindsley said they are pleased to have assembled some of the most respected dairy and agriculture leaders in the country to participate in their funding round. Forever Feed is committed to building world-class water-saving technology that will allow their customers anywhere in the world to sustainably grow cattle feed 365 days a year. Steve Shedaday, owner of the award-winning Bar 20 Dairy out of Kerman, California, said their company is committed to building a sustainable future for generations to come. The Forever Feed Mill solution will provide a predictive water-saving and decarbonizing platform that they believe will enhance the output and welfare of their animals while reducing the environmental impact in the greater Fresno area and potentially all around the world. Forever Feed Technologies has partnered with international automation and engineered design firms to bring the Forever Feed Mill system to market. In addition to Bar 20 Dairy, other California-based dairies that are participating in the funding include River Ranch Farms of Hanford and Producers Dairy Products of Fresno. The San Benito Agricultural Land Trust recently completed steps to permanently protect another portion of the Phil Foster Ranch in San Benito County's fertile San Juan Valley. With assistance from two public funding programs, SBALT has acquired an agricultural easement that brings the total protected acreage of the ranch, also known as Pinnacle Organically Grown, to 51 acres that will be preserved for agricultural purposes forever, that according to announcement from the Land Trust. The Foster family previously protected a 27-acre portion of their ranch in 2019. Funding for the recent 24-acre agricultural easement came from the California Strategic Growth Council's Sustainable Agricultural Land Conservation Program and the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Agricultural Conservation Easement Program. SAUC is part of the California Climate Investments, a statewide initiative that puts billions of cap-and-trade dollars to work, reducing greenhouse gas emissions and improving public health and the environment, particularly in disadvantaged communities, according to SBALT's announcement. The U.S. Agricultural Conservation Easement Program helps landowners, land trusts, and other organizations protect, restore, and enhance wetlands, working farms, and ranches through conservation easements, according to the announcement. Phil Foster farms 295 acres of certified organic vegetables, nuts, and fruit on two ranches near San Juan Bautista and Hollister. The farms produce about 60 different crops that are sold at the San Juan Bautista Farm on Duncan Avenue on Saturdays through farmers markets and through the Central Coast and Bay Area at local retail stores. The easement ensures that the land will remain available for agricultural purposes even as development pressures increase in the surrounding area. The stone fruit crop is looking tight out of California. There is nowhere near the product available for demand, especially on yellow peaches, according to John McLarty of HMC Farms. He notes that peaches in particular are short, while nectarines have seen more ups and downs in terms of availability. Meanwhile, plums are coming out of an oversupply situation, and supply and demand seem more balanced. As for demand, it remains strong. He says they are hoping that's partially due to the quality. The quality has been outstanding this year, according to McLarty. Add to that the fact that California came into a fairly empty market given a lack of peaches out of the southeast this season. At the same time of the year, the Northwest, Utah, and Colorado are also starting production of stone fruit. As for pricing, it's stronger this year than in past years. This was necessary because yields have been a bit down and every year the costs increase. This is something that they need to see as an industry to stay viable, according to McLarty. Looking ahead, the season should end as it usually does, even with a two-week later start to the California crop. While some stone fruit will wrap up in a few weeks, there may be a gap between the end of the current peach crop and the late California peach crop. On plums, the bulk of the industry finishes late September or into early October, though there is a handful of people who will go a bit later than that, according to McLarty. The electric vehicle charging company created by Volkswagen in the aftermath of its diesel emissions scandal said that a new 75-megawatt solar farm in Southern California is now up and running. Electrify America is not operating the solar farm. Instead, the company struck a 15-year virtual power purchase agreement with renewable energy developer TerraGen. It is the latest development in Electrify America's efforts to link itself to renewable energy projects. The firm broke ground on the plant back in February. The typical VPPA involves a buyer, which pays a fixed price for whatever energy is generated, and a seller, which generates the energy and sells it via the grid to the buyer at a market rate. The buyer assumes some risk because the seller might wind up selling the energy below the fixed rate, yet the buyer could also see the upside if market prices trend above the fixed rate. In other words, Electrify America is taking on some risk with this deal. In exchange, it gets to say it's helping clean up the grid while potentially benefiting from rising energy prices. Renewable energy developers play a critical role in decarbonizing the grid. For its part, Electrify America states that the peak energy its investment will generate is comparable to the power drawn by 500 EVs charging at once months at an average speed of 150 kilowatts. The solar farm's annual production is projected at 225 gigawatt hours. Electrify America says in a press release that the outcome of this deal will be comparable to the carbon sequestered by planting nearly 400 million trees.
A new ag order for San Diego County expected to be enforced by the end of 2023 involves complex water regulations for the massive $1.3 billion ornamental industry. But the great diversity of ornamental crops that dominate this growing region and complexity of regulations make compliance challenging for growers, some of whom grow over 400 crop varieties. The ag order will focus on nitrogen management and groundwater quality, but new considerations are needed to address the variety of crops grown by a single farmer, a common practice in San Diego. In other words, these regulations are more like those seen in the last decade for large-scale production in the Central Valley and are not relevant to the landscape, crops, and expertise of San Diego County growers. UCCE floriculture advisor Jerry Spinelli has been on the front lines of this issue.
Here in San Diego, agriculture is very different. It's not as standardized. We have the avocado and the citrus groves that are a little bit more, similar to almonds. But then we have a huge ornamental industry here in San Diego, which is the one I serve. And it's a powerhouse for economic and social development. As comparison, it produces the ornamental industry in San Diego produces $1.3 billion dollars of value, which makes it more valuable than all the tomatoes grown statewide. For comparison, and we're just below all the lettuce grown statewide. So it's a really big industry, but it's a very diverse industry. So that makes it really difficult for us, for growers, to apply the same rules. And to give you a little bit more detail, the rules are that the grower needs to report the applied nitrogen and the removed nitrogen. And the applied nitrogen is easy to calculate because you can just look up how much fertilizer you have bought in that year. But the removed is really difficult because, again, in the case of lettuce, in the case of almonds, you can say, okay, I produced 4,500 pounds of kernels of almonds this year. And then some researcher will come up with a percentage that says, okay, this is the percentage of nitrogen that is in an almond. And so then you multiply the yield by the percentage and you come up with a number that is maybe, I don't know, 150 pounds of nitrogen per acre. And you say, well, okay, I applied 200 pounds of nitrogen per acre with my fertilizer. I removed 150 with my crop. There is only 50 pounds of nitrogen unaccounted for, right? And so then I guess you can make the argument, okay, those 50 pounds that are unaccounted for had the potential to pollute surface water or to pollute groundwater. And so we want to minimize that number, right? We want to make it smaller. And this is a reasonable framework. But again, how do you do that for a grower that has a greenhouse and produces a million one-gallon pots with a petunia in it that go, or with a poinsettia in it, or whatever, with a marigold in it that then my mom buys at Home Depot, right? I buy at Home Depot to gift it to my mom for Mother's Day or to my girlfriend, right? Like a bunch of roses for my girlfriend. How do you calculate the yield, and how do you multiply? What do I multiply that yield by to get the nitrogen removed? So this is the detail of why it's it's been difficult to adapt these rules to our specific reality, to our context.
So the million-dollar question stands, what would an ag order look like in San Diego County that is fair to the types of growers in the region? In a perfect world, the ag order wouldn't exist at all, but since we live in the most regulated state in the country for agriculture, that simply isn't possible. Spinelli said the Regional Water Quality Control Board for the county is doing its best to achieve a mutually beneficial regulation through collaboration with growers, farm advisors, the County Farm Bureau, and other entities. He said it's hard to know what the solution will end up being, but ideally, it needs to not be a big burden financially and not create any barriers for growers.
The characteristics of this new ag order to be successful, it need to be something that the grower will accept, and it will be easy to accept for them. Of course, we also need to worry about the environment and everybody, all the stakeholders are on board with this. And so the objective of these regulations is, again, make sure that agriculture as a sector and in San Diego, specifically the ornamental industry, does not discharge nutrients, and we're talking about the usual suspects there are nitrogen and phosphorus into the environment, into surface waters, because then we got eutrophication and all these things that we all know. And then there will be also a conversation about, and probably that's where I'm more relevant, about the education aspect and the technical assistance aspect, and also the risk evaluation aspect, right? Because one of the way that you mitigate, in my opinion, the easiest and the more successful way that you mitigate the potential for polluting the environment is analyzing, walking the nursery and seeing where the risk is higher, and there is practices to mitigate that risk, right? I have a pond here where I collect water that runs off from the field. Okay, can I line that pond so I don't contaminate the ground, the groundwater? Can I reuse that water so it doesn't spill over into the creek? Can I pump it somewhere where I treat it somehow? Then I kill the pathogens, I get rid of the sediment, and then I can reuse it. I can repump it into the irrigation system. So can I capture the storm water as it rains on the roof of my greenhouse before it runs over my nursery and maybe picks up fertilizer and pesticides, and then it ends up in the storm in the storm drain? Can I collect that water right at the gutter and put it underground, and it goes directly on the storm drain, so it cannot pick up any of these nasty pollutants? So I guess another big theme that will be there, and I hope it will be there, will be education and technical assistance, and providing solutions and practices to growers to protect the environment.
Spinelli had been working with growers across San Diego County on the current ag order and has been instrumental in providing technical assistance to growers since he joined Cooperative Extension in 2020.
I've been honored to work with all of them and to provide education. Part of the current ag order requires that each grower get 2 years of education, specifically on irrigation management and in runoff reduction and in stormwater management. And luckily, that happens to be my expertise. So I've been doing seminars in English and in Spanish, because also another, for some growers, a big barrier is language. So I've been providing these seminars, the same seminars. Once I give it in English, and then I translate it, and one I give it in Spanish, And the themes are anything that you can think of, from measuring pressure to make sure that your impact sprinklers are running at the right pressure, a lot of, you know, irrigation technique and irrigation technology, treatment options for treating runoff water so you can reuse it, calculating how much you need to irrigate and when and how much. When my phone rings, the first question that the grower asks me is like, "Hey Jerry, am I over irrigating?" Because of course this is a big concern, right? Water is expensive, and then if I over irrigate, I generate runoff, and now all these inspectors, I get in trouble with the water quality regulator. So it's a win-win. It's a win-win, right? Anything that I can do for a grower to irrigate as much as they need for plants to grow, but not more than that, not a drop more than that. Then it's a win-win for everybody. That's what I've been doing in terms of education.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Chalstrom.
Fertilizer prices continued their more than year-long decline through the first 2 weeks of August of 2023. The University of Illinois' FarmDoc daily website shows that on a per pound of nitrogen basis, urea and liquid nitrogen fertilizers have historically been priced at a premium of 35 to 40% above anhydrous ammonia. However, the premium narrowed in 2022 as the Russia-Ukraine conflict disrupted global fertilizer markets. The premium on liquid relative to anhydrous has returned to more historical levels, while the gap has continued to narrow between urea and anhydrous prices. This is attributed to continued expansion in global production capacity combined with lower demand prospects. The continued decline in fertilizer prices improves return and income prospects as we look ahead to the soon-to-be-released crop budgets for 2024. If the low premium on urea relative to anhydrous extends into the coming months, it may make urea a more attractive nitrogen option for farmers in 2024. The Environmental Protection Agency is launching a study of pollution generated by confined animal feeding operations after the agency rejected two petitions by environmental groups from 2017 and 2022 to make wholesale changes to CAFL regulations. The EPA announced plans to form a federal advisory subcommittee to study CAFOs sometime in 2024. The process is expected to take 12 to 18 months, according to a letter sent to the environmental groups that petitioned EPA in 2017. The 2022 petition filed by numerous state-level clean water advocacy groups, as well as Friends of the Earth, Earth Justice, and others, asked the EPA to adopt a presumption that large CAFOs using wet manure management systems discharge pollutants. And a 2017 petition filed by Food and Water Watch and others asked the agency to change regulations to assume a number of things, including CAFOs with certain production area characteristics actually discharge, and regulations should assume CAFOs applying manure to land as fertilizer actually discharge, among other assumption requests. Russia again this week has stepped up drone attacks on Ukraine's grain warehouses and ports on the Danube River, while also intercepting and boarding a cargo ship on the Black Sea. Russia's destruction of Ukrainian warehouses and granaries came as a Russian patrol ship fired on, and its crew then boarded a foreign flag vessel on its way towards Ukraine's port of Izmail. State Deputy Principal, Deputy Spokesperson Vedant Patel.
Russia has publicly announced that all ships proceeding to Ukrainian ports in Black Sea waters will be considered as potential carriers of military cargo. This is, in our view, an unacceptable escalation.
It only compounds the damage that Russia has already done to the world food supply.
Since Russia's termination of its participation in the Black Sea Grain Initiative, Ukraine's Ministry of Foreign Affairs has reported that Russia has attacked 26 port infrastructure facilities and destroyed over 220,000 tons of grain.
Patel says the U.S. is urging Russia to rejoin the grain initiative immediately.
It was instrumental in stabilizing global prices, as well as a key factor in ensuring that grain gets to the places it needs to go.
Especially in underdeveloped Middle Eastern and African countries suffering high rates of malnutrition and starvation. Deputy Secretary Soshiel Torres-Small discusses agriculture export opportunities in Angola and surrounding nations, including an upcoming USDA-led ag trade mission.
When it comes to trade opportunity, sub-Saharan Africa is promising, but it's often also overlooked. And the U.S. trade mission to Angola presents a unique opportunity for U.S. food and agriculture exports to expand and explore new business opportunities. This is for exporters, which can be distributors and farmers, folks who are looking to expand their market into Angola. We'll also be looking to make connections for folks in neighboring countries of Democratic Republic of the Congo and the Republic of Congo. It's an exciting opportunity because there's just such large demand. So in 2022, U.S. food and agriculture exports to Angola totaled $236.8 million, which made it the seventh largest American market for U.S. exporters. Angola was also the largest U.S. poultry market in Africa and the sixth largest globally last year, importing more than $232 million of American poultry and poultry products.
Deputy Secretary Soshil Torres-Small. New data from USDA's Economic Research Service shows that adult obesity increased during the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic. Broad efforts to contain COVID-19 included travel, work, and social restrictions. Such behavioral adjustments disrupted the dietary and activity patterns of U.S. adults. The percentage of adults with obesity was 40.7% in early 2020. 1 year later, the rate grew by 1.8 percent points to 42.5%. There was not an immediate substantial increase when the pandemic began. Rather, the obesity rate was statistically indistinguishable from the pre-pandemic prevalence during the first 3 months of the pandemic, March through May of 2020, at 40.8%. The next three time periods saw statistically significant increases relative to the baseline pre-pandemic period. The total obesity rate increase from March of 2020 to March of 2021 was more than triple the average yearly growth rate of half of a percentage point in the preceding decade, 2011 to 2019.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.